Welcome back to the Proud Lily White podcast with me, Sian, and I'm pleased to say we have Lee back in the house. Welcome back, Lee.
Hello, hello. It's good to be back again.
Feeling better and all ready and raring to go.
Definitely. I must admit, the podcast last month was really good. I really enjoyed it. It was just great to hear, you know, different voices and different input and real in-depth talk about the women's game, real insight. I think it's really, really valuable. So thanks for putting that on. It was fabulous.
Well, thank you. I certainly enjoyed it. The guys from the Pride of Irons were good fun to talk to. And yes, geeking out about women's football is what we do. So it was good fun, but I'm pleased to have you back and that we can focus back in on some big things this month. We've got Rainbow Laces and everything that's been happening around that, as well as, of course, all the action for both the men and the women. So plenty to talk about. I guess let's start with the Rainbow Laces and, well, the beautiful stadium lit up in rainbow colours again. And
wasn't it magnificent?
It's just it's brilliant, isn't it? And you got to go out on the pitch once again and have a chat with Chris and with Ben. So how was that?
Yeah, Chris and I went down. I was slightly I don't want to say annoyed, but because I'm in the northeast upper, and we was doing the pitch side talk from the southwest lower, I had to walk around the entire stadium, and obviously it takes about 10-15 minutes to get the whole way around. Yeah. So I actually had to leave my seat at about half an hour mark. And then do the long walk all the way around down to the pitch side. So I only saw the first 30 minutes of the first half, and then like the last couple of minutes when I was pitch side. But I've got to say, the rainbow goal flashes again. It was just absolutely beautiful seeing the Rainbow Stadium from miles away, absolutely miles. I mean, what people have to remember is Tottenham and is in North London, and it is quite high up and elevated. So that stadium would have been seen from the whole of London. People on the Shard would have been looking out across North London and they'd see it. And, you know, it's so great to have the club so invested in us and what we do and our values, and to be able to put on such a spectacle like that. It's just lost for words really for it.
And it was obviously that they chose that game specifically because they wanted to light the stadium up and for everybody to see it. You know, it could have been the Norwich game. I think we were anticipating it being the Norwich game, being the kind of the weekend game, but actually having it that evening game when you could be walking towards the Rainbow Stadium and everybody could see it was fantastic. And lots of people in their rainbow scarves, myself included, I've got a slightly inebriated chap on the way home on the train was like, I like your scarf. I'm like, thank you. You know, so I think it's just really positive, isn't it? All the difference in attitude there is now around that kind of thing, and the fact that we are moving in the right direction, and people do seem to be just that much more open to it.
It's really, really good to see. A really good example of this is so when I left my seat, the person who has the seat next to me, I'm not on the aisle, but I'm next to an aisle for my season ticket. And the person next to me, they didn't renew their season ticket. So I now have random people turn up every match next to me. And there was this chap there. And obviously I left on the half hour mark and sort of got raised eyebrows, like, why is someone leaving this early? Went and did the talk with Chris, which I'll come back to in a second. And then when I got back to my seat, the chap next to me just sort of sat there for a minute or two. And then he just sort of gave me a little nudge on the shoulder and went, was that you down there just now? And I was like, yes, it was me. And he was like, it's really great to have you back at the club. I'm so glad you came back. We're all really glad you're here. And given the fact that I just shared my personal story down on the pitch side about spending time away from football because I didn't feel included, I didn't feel like it was home, to get back to my seat and have not just the person next to me, but someone who I know is probably never going to see me again because they're not going to be sat in that seat, for them to just turn around and just be able to say, look, whatever's happened, we're here just as a club. That just instilled so much confidence in me. And it really shows why speaking out about what happened with me and people understanding that story is important, because I don't think he would have made the effort if he hadn't heard the story behind it. And, you know, it really touched me. And I was just a bit starstruck in that moment.
Yeah, no, fantastic for you and for everybody. And I think also it's part of that conversation. I think, you know, when we're talking about players coming out and things as well, you know, those are the conversations that are being had now. And yes, you've still got your idiots and you've still got the people online who, you know, I mean, we know that there has been some coverage on television from other countries lately that hasn't been quite what we'd like it to be, if we're being very
That's very polite, Sian.
But, you know, in the stadiums, at the grounds in this country, when we're talking about Premier League football, and football in this country, I think we are moving in the right direction. And I think the more people that are able to be out and are able to be themselves, the more that spreads and the more people see it as a personal thing and not just a, you know, a song that they've sung forever. And why can't they sing that song? When they see it as a person and the reality of what that meant to somebody, I think it does make a difference.
Yeah, it gets the message across and sort of it hits home a bit more, because, you know, there'll be people that will be going to these matches and they won't even necessarily think about the things that they're saying or chanting or singing. And for them, it's just like they're in autopilot with that. And it's not until you actually see someone who's reacted bad to that, or it's affected them to a point of them getting overwhelmed or emotional, it's not until you sort of see the implications of what you're doing before you then actually question what you're doing yourself. And I think that whole education piece is really, really important. And that's why, you know, we had like pieces in the program and the conversation between Ben Davies and Helen Richardson-Walsh. And, you know, it's about making it more personal to people so that they understand it themselves and they want to better themselves. And I think that's sort of, it sort of speaks into what the whole motto around this Rainbow Laces was, which was Lace Up, Speak Up. And it's giving people the opportunity not just to speak about their experiences, but also to speak up for how they want to help LGBTQ plus people, how they want to improve their match day experience, how they want to improve their way of life in the sport and across other sports as well. It's not just football that do the Rainbow Laces campaign. There are other sports that do it as well. So it's, you know, it's something big, but it's also something personal. And I think trying to get that is, you know, what we've been trying to do.
And the more people who you respect who speak up about something, the more likely you're going to be to think about it and to maybe challenge yourself and your own views on something. So when you've got players, you know, so last season we had Eric Dier and Pierre Emil Højbjerg talking about it. This season we've got Ben Davies talking about it. The more of those players who can speak up and you know, say, look, I'm straight and I'm happy with that, but you know what, I support people who aren't, and I believe that everybody deserves to be in this game. And I, you know, in my personal view, this is the right thing to be doing. And this is what we're doing as a club. You know, it really does hopefully hit home to a few people who haven't really thought about it in that way before and might actually go, okay, it's something I do need to challenge myself on, because these people that I respect and that I value, that's what they're saying to me. You know, and every different facet of the way that we can get to change people's minds is important. Every different way that we can find, because most people, you know, are just responding to kind of the way they've been brought up and the things that they were taught when they were younger. So you have to unlearn those things. And there's different ways of doing it. And having yourself and Chris out on the pitch, having Ben and Helen having a chat on social media, you know, and you know, two, you know, sporting people, you know, I mean, we forget as well, you know, Helen's our patron and she's been supporting us for a long time, but equally, you know, she's a gold medal winning a hockey player. You know, she knows what it means to be a professional athlete and to perform at the highest level, and you can't, you know, deny that having people like that speaking up is going to make an impact. So yeah, it's been another really great campaign. And also this campaign, of course, we've launched a new facet, I guess, for the Proud Lily Whites. We've come up with a whole new idea, which we're hoping is going to mean a lot, not just to us, but to lots of different groups, so supporters groups and podcasts and everything in Tottenham Hotspur world. People can now become a proud champion for the Proud Lily Whites.
We love it. So our proud champions are any supporters group, any sort of group that is affiliated with Tottenham in any way. We want to be able to say to LGBTQ plus people in the Spurs world that you're not just welcome at the Proud Lilywhites, you're welcome in your groups. So for instance, we've got Buenos Aires Spurs, we've got Dallas Spurs, there's so many different groups around the world, and we've already reached out to a few, and a few have reached out to us who want to help with us, with our cause, with our campaigns, with, you know, making their group a welcome, inclusive environment. And, you know, we're partnering with them for them to become proud champions, where they champion diversity and they champion inclusion and they challenge homophobia, biphobia, transphobia. And, you know, they call it out when they see it. And we have groups now that are becoming proud champions, where they want to champion being LGBTQ plus allies. And, you know, it's a really great way for people who are in different places around the world, who maybe don't even know about the Proud Lilywhites, who just are LGBTQ plus, whether they're out or whether they're, you know, still finding their way to come out, they will know that because their local group or their podcast they listen to is a proud champion, that that is a safe and welcoming environment, and that that is someone who takes our difficulties into account, and that they are looking out for us. And, you know, that level of detail can be really important to someone. They may not want to reach out to the Proud Lilywhites, they may not want to out themselves, but knowing that their local supporters group is a proud champion, that may make it feel like a more welcome and inclusive environment to go and engage with other people in that group. And I think it hopefully it will lead to more people feeling comfortable to be able to have those conversations that maybe were a bit difficult before.
And even if they don't want to have those conversations, but they want to exist in a group and know that they're welcome, even if people knew that about them, because let's face it, that's one of those difficult things, isn't it? Is that kind of line of, when do I have to tell people? And, you know, I'll do these people who seem to like me, actually, will they actually like me once they find out this thing about me? That's, I think, something that we all go through before we come out. And even once we're out, you know, that worry. So, you know, going forward, if your local supporters group or the podcast that you're listening to, if they've got Proud Lilywhites Proud Champion badge, which is available for them for their websites and their social media and all those kind of things, if they're showing that proudly, then they're saying, you're welcome with here, you're one of us. If you're a Spurs supporter, it doesn't matter what your sexuality is, you're welcome here. And we don't necessarily need to discuss it, we don't necessarily need to know that about you, but if, you know, that's something that you want to share with us, then that's fine. And even if it's something in the background, then that's fine too, because all we're about here is supporting Spurs and welcoming everybody from the Spurs family to be with us. So I'm really happy that we've got quite a number of groups already from, as you say, different geographical regions. We've also got Armed Forces Spurs and a number of podcasts who are signed up already. And there's not a limit on places. If your supporters group wants to sign up, then please do get in touch with us, because not only is that going to be a real help to your members potentially, but equally we want to help you as a group and be able to answer your questions and your queries. And, you know, if you're wondering how you can be a more inclusive group, then if you're a proud champion, we're there to help you with that. And we're going to provide you with some resources in terms of our time and our, you know, our voices going forwards, you know, and hopefully we can, you know, get you involved in some events. You know, we get some great events happening with the Proud Lilywhites. We can reach out and share those with you. We can, you know, share members. We can do lots of things together that just increase that family sense. We are a Spurs family, and we want everybody to feel welcome, which, you know, and if you've got members who are LGBTQ plus, but don't necessarily, you know, understand how Proud Lilywhites works or feel comfortable with that yet, then, you know, we can be a bridge to that as well. However it works best for people, it's a two-way street is what we're hoping. We want to be able to give and to receive and to make this Spurs community as strong as it can be, as inclusive as it can be for everybody involved. So yeah, we're going to have a page on our website shortly, Lee.
Yep, it's in the works, don't worry. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a Proud Champions wall. So everyone who is a Proud Champion and has nominated a liaison between us and them, just so we have a line of contact. Every group that is sort of affiliated with the Proud Lilywhites Proud Champions affiliation will go onto the Proud Champions wall, and you'll be able to go on our website and look, and you'll be able to see local supporters group. Like, for instance, you might be visiting family when Spurs are playing next, and you think, oh, you know what, I want to go to a local Spurs group who's in the area. You can look on our website and you can see if they're a Proud Champion. And if they are, you already know that they've made that commitment and that they're gonna welcome you regardless of, like you said, sexuality or whether you're out or not. You know, it's not a problem, but it's, you know, that if you want to be your true self there, you can, and that it's going to be a great environment for you to go to. So I think there's also that beauty, because we don't always watch Spurs in the same place. We don't always watch from home or from the stadium. You know, when things are like opened up properly and people are traveling or you're on holiday, you know, you might want to watch Spurs when you're on holiday. And I think it's great to be able to go, actually, you know what, this particular association has got the Proud Champions badge, or you've looked on our website and you've seen their logos on there. You already know before you go that it's a place that you can go.
I mean, lockdown has had many disadvantages, but for us, I think, as the Proud Lilywhites, one of the big advantages was those Zoom calls that we did, that meant that we got to meet our members from various different places around the world, and have that value that they added to the group, you know, and that gave them the inclusion at that point to then be part of things now, and for us to be able to have seen their faces, even though we've never met in person, and know who they are. So we realised the value of, you know, of sharing those kind of experiences with people around the world. And this is just another way of being able to do that. And we hope that lots of you out there who've got supporters groups will want to join us and become Proud Champions. We say Proud Champions because we do expect that, you know, you will be active in your support for the Proud Lilywhites, and you will, you know, understand what it means to be an ally and a champion for LGBTQ plus people. And as I say, it's a two-way street, so we intend to give things back to you as well, but we do expect there to be, you know, a real desire from you to be that. And if there is, then great, you get a nice smart little logo to put on your website and a chat with us every now and then. And, you know, and also, you know, it's a new thing for us, so we're just kind of building it. And if there's something that you think we should be doing with these groups and that we're not at the moment, then absolutely come forward and tell us and say what you'd like to receive. But I mean, I think, Lee, what would you, as somebody who is LGBTQ plus and has suffered, you know, at the hands of homophobia, what would you like a champion to do for you?
For me, if there's a supporters group out there and they weren't quite sure what being a champion meant, an example that I would give that would make me feel like they was championing us as a community would be that when they see homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, they just call it out. And it's a really simple, small thing, but it's also a really big thing as well at the same time. It's a small act and it's a difficult conversation maybe to have in the moment, but it will have such a big impact, because the reason why people are homophobic, biphobic, transphobic is, like you've said before, it could just be that's what they've always known. They don't know anything different. And we're really big campaigners and we're really big educators. And that's what I would want a Proud Champion to do, is to call it out when they see it and to have a conversation and say, look, what you've just said or what you've just insinuated is not okay. And you know, us as an organization, we don't want that in our group. It doesn't necessarily mean excluding them, it doesn't mean alienating them, it just means having the conversation and educating them that what you've just said is not okay, and we don't want you to be like that when you're with us. We don't want you to be like that in the rest of the world, but when you're here, you can't do that. And I think for me, that is one of the main things that I would want a Proud Champion to do.
And, you know, as Proud Lilywhites, you know, that education pillar is really important to us and has been a key part of everything that we do, is, you know, because we understand that it's not always easy and that everybody comes from a different place, and education is needed. You know, we've seen within our own group, you know, internalized homophobia and how that affects people and the way they talk about themselves and other people, even when they are part of the LGBTQ plus family. So that, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, and there is still a long way to go for a lot of people, but hopefully by being a proud champion, you can feel supported by us to have those conversations with people and to make sure that your space is a welcoming space for everybody. Because, and hopefully that will, you know, just mean that, you know, as a supporters group, you grow and you flourish even more than you are at the moment, you know. And I think that's what we want to see is, you know, and we've said before that actually is that as the Proud Lily Whites, our job is to do ourselves out of a job. And if, you know, all the supporters groups around the country are welcoming and open to LGBTQ plus fans, that is another step in that journey of not needing a specific supporters group just for that group.
Yeah, I think it's if you want to take our end goal is we want to not exist as a group in terms of having to exist to champion these things and to call it out and to make the game a better place for everyone. I think if you look at the end goal of us not having to exist as an organization, I think it starts with every organization associated with Spurs or with football taking it on board and doing something about it. So I think this is a really big step both for us and for Spurs as well to be able to start getting everyone on board and everyone being champions, not just us. I think it's not necessarily going to be easy for some supporters group, and they may want some advice on, you know, we want to do this but we don't know how, or we have this problem at the moment, can you help with it? And that's obviously what we're there for, is we're there to help them get to that point that they can do it themselves. So of course it's all about that communication, that direct line. So I would definitely encourage anyone who's listening who is part of a different supporters group, a regional or you know, or different groups, if you're part of another group and you want them to become a proud champion, just ask the question, and if they're not sure how to do it, they can get in touch and we can have that conversation.
And we'd love to hear from you, so do let us know. But I suppose we ought to talk a little bit about, you know, performances on the pitch and how that's all going. And for once, it's not too bad. I mean, let's start with the men. Two games this week which have been what they should have been, you know, nice, relatively tidy wins. Although my next door neighbour did turn to me half time in the Brentford game and did say, "You're happy?" And I was a bit like, He was like, "What?" I'm like, "It's 1-0. I'm never happy at 1-0 because I'm a Spurs fan, and you can't be happy at 1-0 because you never know what's going to happen." But we did get the second goal, and it was quite a nice goal as well.
Yeah, it was a nice one. Yeah, it's nice to watch a nice goal and to see shots on target and stuff like that. It's, you know, we're being treated now. But like you said, the last two matches in the Premier League, at least anyway, two wins, two clean sheets and two matches where we've scored more than two goals. You know, you look at that and at face value, you think, well, we should be doing that. But when you look at the recent track record and the recent history, there are things that just weren't happening. We weren't getting the shots on target. We weren't getting more than one goal. If we was winning, it was a 1-0. And we weren't keeping clean sheets. So although it's what you would expect us to do, we haven't been doing it. So to be doing it, we need to, you know, take a little bit of pride in the fact that, okay, the wheels are starting to turn. You know, we're starting to see a little bit more about what Conte is all about, and the message is starting to get through. It's obviously something that's going to take time, and it's not going to be an overnight fix. I don't think anyone thinks that, but it's good that in the matches where you'd expect us to get a clean sheet and you'd expect us to score multiple times, we now are. So I'm glad that progress has come on quite quickly, because, you know, we do need some results. And, you know, if we get our game in hand against Burnley and we get the 3 points there, we're top four and we're only 6 or 7 points off of the top then.
Yeah, this is the thing that struck me, you know, all this doom and gloom talk about the season and how terrible it is, and then you actually look at the league and where we are, and you actually say, well, fourth place is absolutely achievable if we start putting those runs together, if we start getting those results in the way that you would expect us to. You know, yes, the top three are slightly further ahead than everybody else, and it might be more difficult to attain that. But if what we're saying is we want Champions League football again, then that is achievable this season with the situation the way it is, if we can just start to put together those runs. And those two games are a good start. You know, as I say, in both games, at least one of the goals was a nice team move. I think, you know, as I say, that second goal against Brentford, and then, I mean, Moura's goal against Norwich, where, you know, little 1-2 with Sonny in there, you know, and actually Moura not just running into defenders, but actually being able to, I mean, and that shot that he got away was, you know, absolutely top class. If we can get more of those kind of performances, I think we've still got Harry Kane struggling, and, you know, there's still a way to go before he's anywhere near his best, but we're starting to move in that direction. And even Sonny not looking his best, you know, scored and was involved, you know, and got an assist. So, and also, as I understand it, Reguilón's injury is not as bad as we might have thought.
Oh, so his tweet that he put out was adorable. Did you see it, Sian?
It was brilliant. Oh,
that was so, if you haven't seen it, just head over and have a look. I won't spoil it. I'll let you look yourself, but it was adorable.
It was very good. So it sounds like he will be back before we know it. And interestingly, I mean, obviously Jafet Tanganga got some minutes against Brentford, and even more minutes against Norwich. Still not looking quite as good as he did in those games where he really wowed everybody. But, you know, we've got the young players, and Sessegnon, after having that nightmare in Europe, got some minutes again against Norwich. And I mean, I think his confidence has to have been knocked by that whole situation, this whole setting up that game as his big chance. And then he got a red card, of course, you know, but he's as the game went on, I think he got a bit more confident and a bit stronger. So there's lots of positives in there. And then we've got January transfer window, which, you know, again, I'm trying to ignore all the gossip about talk. That, because you never know quite what's going to happen. But in theory, centre-back, another striker could be coming in. We could have a reasonable amount of money to spend in January. And obviously, Romero's injury has been a blow for us, but he should be back in the new year. And we've got half a season there.
Yeah, and you look at, so Conte's run of form in the Premier League. So we played four matches, we've won three and we've drawn one. You know, considering how difficult a season this is going to be, and like you said, with what's going to happen in January and new people coming in, etc., I think it is literally a case of you just need to take each match as it comes, and just every player just needs to go out and perform what they can. And I think that is starting to get through a little bit now. And I think, you know, we look at some of the previous results that we've had, and, you know, losing 3-0 against United was, you know, at the time you look at it and you think, yeah, of course that would happen. But you look at it now with the way that the team are playing, you think, well, if we played United, would we lose 3-0? I don't think right now we would. I think right now we would give them a good game. Would we definitely win it? Not sure on that, but I don't think we'd lose 3-0.
It was interesting, at half time against Norwich, Seb Bassong was on the pitch and he was chatting, and he was talking about obviously that season where he, despite having Jonathan Woodgate, Ledley King, you know, Michael Dawson, those kind of players around him, he was getting quite a few games. And he was saying, you know, the thing was actually that all those players were playing for the team, they weren't playing for themselves, and so actually they didn't mind not playing if, so long as the person who was playing, you know, was getting the result. And I think, you know, it was a really interesting comment, and possibly a comment on some of the players at the moment, in terms of actually what's important here is not your own position, it's the team position. And yes, you've got a career and that's important, but actually if you play as a team, then the best things happen.
And positivity breeds positivity in that sense. So if, you know, the person who is playing in your role, they perform well, it's just going to inspire you to do better, to try and get that place back. And when you do get the opportunity, it's about the competition for places, and you want to go out there and you want to be better than the other person. And I think that that's going to be definitely key. And I think another really good prospect, given the fact that he's been man of the match for the last two matches, Oliver Skip, obviously coming back against Norwich, bless him.
Some of those tackles, just
outstanding.
I mean, sliding tackle and then getting the pass off as well. I mean, just beautiful. And I think, you know, he is, I mean, and we've said it about Winksy a couple of seasons ago, and it didn't work out for him so far. But I think Oliver Skip's got every chance to become one of the best, you know, defensive midfielders in the league. I mean, he is, you know, I think going to Norwich was great for him because he got a whole season where he was man of the match most games, at least on the public vote anyway. And then he's come back in and, you know, I mean, today, I think, well, the last couple of games, he's even looked stronger than Højbjerg, I think, in terms of that that position. I mean, they formed a great partnership, but I think Skip's been the one putting in those really key tackles and those moments of how did he do that?
He's just all over the pitch, isn't he? You know, I just looking back on the Norwich match in particular, you just think how many of those moments where you just want to curl up because you know something's going to happen, how many times was Skip there? Whether he was getting his head on it, whether he was putting his laces through it, whether it was a delicate slide in, he just did everything that he needed to do.
Not to mention, certainly at the beginning of the game, doing his Yan Vertonghen and you know, streaming through the pitch with the ball at his feet and having a couple of shots, you know, you know, leading by example in that sense of, you know, let's go at it, let's take this game to them.
I mean, you know? a month ago, we wasn't getting shots on target, and so to have Skip just, you know, the confidence that he seems to have right now is just wonderful to watch. He's an absolute delight to watch.
Yeah, no, I must admit, I'm enjoying that. And I it's quite fun as well. So my nephew Ben went to the Spurs Christmas party some years ago. And one of the players who was there was Oliver Skip. And he's got a picture. We've got a picture of the two of them. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to be a good one someday, the way Skippy's going. That's a good photo to have, I think. So, but what you're saying about competition for places, I think there's a good example of that in the women's team at the moment, because for the last few seasons, Becky Spencer in the Spurs goal hasn't had much real competition in terms of the person who's been backing her up. But the last couple, Becky's been out injured. We're assuming injured. We don't know for sure, but we're assuming injured for a few games. And Tinney's come in and played against Arsenal, Manchester United and West Ham and put in cracking performances. And first and foremost, you know, that's going to be interesting now, decision for Rianne when Becky's fit again, who comes in. But if Becky does win her place back, she knows that she's got to perform, because if she doesn't, we've got another excellent keeper just sitting and waiting for her chance. So, you know, that competition thing is, I think, a key element to, you know, the improvement in Spurs women this season.
Yeah, and what an improvement it has been as well, by the way, like getting a result against Arsenal. Not only is it the first time we've taken points away from them, it's the first time that we've competed with them for a whole match, the whole way through.
You know what, though? The thing about that game, the most striking thing about that game is that we were disappointed to draw that game because their goal came really late. And I was sitting there going, I knew it was going to happen because both teams have been experts at scoring in the last 10 minutes of the game. So I knew it was coming, but still I was disappointed. And after the, you know, at the beginning of the game, I was saying, let's just keep the deficit down. If we lose by two, I'll be happy because that will be an improvement. Progress. And then we went and performed like that. And for most, you know, and for a long time, we were in the lead in that game and we were frustrating them. And Tinney, we made some excellent saves and the whole team put in a complete shift. And we were disappointed then to when that Miedema goal went in, you know, we were thinking, you know, we should have won that game. And that is not something we're used to feeling. When you're watching the women play Arsenal, that is definitely not a feeling we're used to. So it's a feeling we'd like to see more of. But so just that turnaround. And then to go on against Manchester United and have the opposite thing happen against Manchester United, because they were leading us and we were thinking we should be doing better than this. Man United are not at their best this season. We've beaten City, we've drawn with Arsenal. I'm disappointed that we're not doing better. And then we were the ones that got the late goal and, you know, and drew the game. And, you know, another fantastic, you know, another team that we haven't taken points off in the league before. So a fantastic game. We won't talk about the West Ham game too much because we did go and mess it up a little bit there. I think everybody was frustrated. We've lost two games this season and they both kind of felt a bit similar, Brighton and West Ham, and we didn't kind of get hold of the game. I mean, it was a freezing cold night and we were jolly, jolly cold watching that game. You know, even more disappointingly, of course, Kit Graham has done her ACL now, yeah, so bless. She's out for the rest of the season. And, you know, Kit is so important for us as a creative player. So that's going to be a big blow for us for the rest of the season. We need to work out what's going on in those games and stop it. Because West Ham, with no disrespect to West Ham, you know, they have been, for our time in the Super League, they have been a, you know, fairly comparable side to us. And we've been having good duels. But if we want to be the side that is taking points off the top four, and we want to be the side that is pushing for those top four spots, then we've got to start beating West Ham and Brighton. And we haven't done that this season. Those are the games we've missed. So it's going to be important for us to pick up our heads when we get back. We're away at Aston Villa for our next game. And we're kind of unofficially making that the Rainbow Laces game, because the women's game fall outside of the Rainbow Laces period. But Villa and Proud have invited us to unofficially make that game our Rainbow Laces game. So we'll be there. Kath and I certainly will be at the up in Walsall for that game, looking forward to it and hoping that we can, you know, really take the game forward again, because there are other teams, you know, who are picking up. And Leicester just got their first win, albeit in the Conti Cup. They beat Manchester United on penalties today, which is a great result for them. They've had no results in the league whatsoever so far. They've obviously just parted ways with their manager and got a new manager in. So they'll be, you know, firing on all cylinders and plenty of time to go. Of course, the women do have a break over Christmas, but we've got a couple of games. Again, there's a clash, which I'm not happy about. The men play Liverpool, the women play Everton.
Yeah, it's going to be... Are you going to go to the women's match for that one?
Yeah. Luckily, I've got... Luckily, Moggy is taking my ticket for the men's game. And good old Moggy. So she gets to see the men's game. And I know that there's somebody in that seat watching the game. And it's a home game as well. So Everton home game for the women. I really think that those games should not be on the same day. But what can we do about that? And there's, I mean, even more so coming up, the men are at home to Arsenal and the women are at home to West Ham on the same day. It just begs belief.
Especially when you're trying to build attendances and regular attendances and when people are then having to decide between which one they want to go to, you know. I like to think that people will be able to put their heads together and figure this out, but I also understand that that's not how it works. And, you know, it is difficult because, like you say, you yourself are being torn between which matches to go. And obviously you do a lot of stuff for the women's team. And, you know, it's really important that you are there for them, but also you feel like you're doing that and then missing out on watching the men. And, you know, it's not good to be putting supporters in a position where they have to pick between the two. Why can't we just rearrange it so that we can do both?
Yeah. You know? And I understand that at the moment, you know, supporters are, I mean, I've seen some calls for the women's game not to be on Saturdays because that's when, you know, grassroots women's football is played. And you're like, well, they can't avoid everything. You know, there has to be some. And I think from my perspective, you know, it's a one club mentality. I want to be able to support my team, whether it's the men or the women. And I want to be able to go to as many games as I can for both. I mean, I think we should probably also mention that, of course, that this weekend marked 100 years since the FA banned women's football. But that women were completely unsuitable for football is what they suggested. I think the real reason was that women's football was getting too many people going and watching, and they didn't like that very much. And the women's game was often for charity, so the money was going for charity and things. And they didn't want the competition from another area, I think, is probably what the real reason behind that was. You know, we had attendances of, 53,000, I think it was, up at Goodison Park. For one game, and international games were getting 20,000 people and things. So, you know, there was a market for the women's game. And I think that is probably why they decided that they didn't think women were suitable, because they were just worried about what that would do to the men's game. And it took them 50 years to change their mind. And you just think, what could women's football look like now if we hadn't lost 50 years? Because we are now starting to build and starting to get back to that place. But it's taking us a long time, and you know, it's such a shame. But hopefully, you know, the Women's FA Cup final had a fantastic attendance at Wembley this weekend as well. And Arsenal didn't play terribly well and Chelsea took it. So it's going to be, yeah, so two FA Cup finals for the women in one year. That's going to be fun. But yeah, so we do have to pay homage to the work that people have done in the women's game over the last 50 years to get it back and to being what it is now, but also kind of look back and say, isn't it a shame that we missed out on 50 years and where we could be with the women's game if we'd had those same opportunities that the men had, because, you know, 50 years of not having grounds to play on does affect the progression of the game.
Yeah, and it's good when I think of Spurs, for instance, of all of the infrastructure that we have as a club and being able to make sure that the women are integrated into that and they're not a separate to that. I think that's really important because we have these training facilities that are outstanding, you know, very highly rated. And we have the pitches and we have all this great infrastructure, and I think it needs to be fully integrated. And whether that is, you know, a certain number of matches being played at the men's stadium traditionally, or whether it is they have their own dedicated ground, or whether it is that there's a relationship between the two based on when match days can be and things like that. I think the next step is going to be making that level of integration, not just at Spurs where we're doing relatively well with that, but across the board in women's football. Because if you don't, like you said, if you're not given the opportunity and you're not giving it room to grow, it's only going to be able to feel what it can feel. So if you don't aim high, it's never going to get there. And I think it's that whole one club approach. Like you said, you want to support Spurs, whether that's the men's, whether that's the women's, you want to support Spurs. And yeah, I think that at the core of it is the same across the board. I think there's a lot of people where if you said, oh, your club's women's team are playing, it may not be the first thing that they think of. But if you say, oh, well, Arsenal are playing or Chelsea are playing, and you don't say it's a women's team, there is a level of interest because you're saying that that's your club playing. And I think it's really important that, you know, the people that are in charge of these sorts of decisions are thinking of the future. They're not just thinking of the here and now, they are looking bigger picture. And I think a lot of clubs are doing, you know, using the traditional men's stadiums for matches here and there where it's appropriate to. But I think there needs to be, you know, with planning fixtures in and things like that, I think heads need to come together to get their head around this so that we can have the women's team and the men's team who are not clashing with each other, who get the opportunity to share facilities, who get the opportunity to play on the bigger pitches, get the bigger crowds, get the same sort of airtime on their social media and their marketing and things like that. I think it all needs to come together. And I think we're not quite there in even in Spurs, but a lot of other clubs are still a lot further away from that than we are. So I think that there's a lot to come into that. Yeah,
I think it's difficult with the women's game because it is different from the men's game. So you've got clubs like Durham who are very successful in the women's game, but who don't have a men's club, and other teams who've fallen away over the years because they haven't had a men's club. So we know with the fan-led review, what the Crouch report has suggested is that for the women's game, it needs its own review because we're still kind of working out how that's going to be. How do we keep those clubs like Durham who are doing well and keep them doing well whilst also expecting teams like Spurs and Liverpool and Chelsea who have women's teams to treat those women's team with a certain level of respect and a certain level of engagement, you know, that you see. Probably Chelsea is the best example of that. Over the last few years, they've really developed that and, you know, kept faith with Emma Hayes and built a brilliant setup for their women's team. And other teams are getting there, and Spurs are certainly one of the closer teams, I would say, to being there. But you need to remember that we don't just want a shadow Premier League, essentially, and you can only be in the Women's Super League if you've got a men's Premier League team, because that's how you get the money for it. We need these teams to be a women's team needs to be self-sustaining. It doesn't want to rely on anybody else in order to be able to exist and to compete within its own leagues. So it's a really interesting time for the women's game, and those, it'll be interesting to see how that review takes shape. And we're hoping that fans will be heavily involved in that, as they were in the fan-led review of the men's game, so that we can really have our say. But and we also need to make sure in that same breath that the women's review and the fan-led review don't lose each other, and that the results from both come together so that we can ensure we have a one club approach. Because I think for most of us who are involved in the supporter movement, that's what we want. We want to be able to say, this is my club, and I'm proud of this club, and I support this club, be that the men or the women. And, you know, it's not the first team, it's the men's team and the women's team, you know, which, you know, we're moving in the right direction, and there's a lot of good stuff happening, but we're at a crucial time, I think, to make sure that the women's game progresses. And, you know, I think there's the stuff that the men's game can learn from the women's game as well. And I think for both sides, we're at a key point in making sure that supporters are being heard throughout the game, and that the things that they want and that we want as supporters are being taken into account, and it's not just the people with the money that get to make the decisions.
Yeah, so we're coming up thick and fast with matches now, aren't we, into the busy Christmas period. There's quite a few in the next month, aren't there?
Yes, it gets a little bit crazy, doesn't it? I mean, as I say, the women do take a break over Christmas. So from the women's point of view, we've got Villa and then Everton, and then we've got 2 weeks off over Christmas, and then we're back away at Chelsea on the 9th of January. But the men get a little bit busier than that. So we've got Stade Rennais, we've got Brighton, we've got Leicester, we've got Liverpool, we've got West Ham, and we've got Palace, and that takes us to Boxing Day.
I'm exhausted just looking at that list. I mean, in terms of expectations, realistically, if we perform the way that we performed for the last few matches against bigger opposition, I see us struggling. And it's when I came away from the Norwich match, I wasn't overwhelmed. I wasn't underwhelmed. I was sort of just sat in the, well, that was kind of what I expected sort of band. And I think, no disrespect to Norwich, but you look at their season so far and the quality that they have, and you look at the result, Spurs 3-0, and you put 2-2 together and you think, yep, that was a good match. That was good. Well done. But when you're actually there and you're watching it, there were a lot of individual errors. There was a lot of times when we weren't pressing the ball. There were a lot of times where we sat back and let Norwich come onto us, which, you know, that may be the way that we wanted to play, but you need to stop pressing at some point. You need to stop those crosses coming in. You need to stop the intricate passing. And we just didn't. We just, you know, it was lazy at times, I felt. And against Norwich, no disrespect again to them, you can get away with it. And we did get away with it on numerous occasions. But as soon as you're starting playing the big guns again, as soon as we're like likes of Leicester and Liverpool, and I'd even argue West Ham in the FA Cup, the way they're playing recently, you look at those, and if we perform the way we did today, we're not getting results in those matches. And I think that's going to be the key thing, is managing that expectation. And like I said, taking it each match as it comes and just going out there and doing what you can do in that moment. Because I think if you try and look too far ahead at how busy that schedule is, it's just going to overwhelm anyone.
Yeah, I think we need to be taking those passes and just making the simple pass, particularly when we're in our own half. You know, that too many times, you know, Hugo trying to play out from the back and defenders getting us into trouble with trying to be clever, and then, we need to be looking forward. We need to be making the simple pass where we can, and not trying to over egg things when you're still at this point in time, you know, building a side and building a set of results that you're looking forward to. I think sometimes, though, you know, Spurs being Spurs, when the likes of Liverpool come to town, that's when we actually put in a performance. And that's when we, you know, you look at the City performance from the beginning of the season. Sometimes those are the games that we really do turn up for. So fingers crossed. But it will be a good test to see where we are, and it'll be interesting to see the starting 11 at that point and exactly who's available. We shouldn't be getting overconfident at the moment. I think fourth place is still very much available to us if we get it right. And depending on what happens with Manchester United and with Arsenal and with Leicester, you know, those teams who are in as much of a quandary, I think, at the moment as we are. You know, Manchester United got new manager coming in. So that'll be some changes there as well. So there's a lot up in the air, and all we can do is control our own performances. And I think we've just got to keep building on what we've done, you know, and what we know we can do, and trusting in the manager to bring the results, because I think that was part of the problem under Nuno, was that the players clearly, you know, didn't quite trust in his vision, whatever that might have been. And hopefully under Conte, you know, they are now, you know, listening and growing and doing the things that they need to do. But it's a lot of season still to play.
Yeah, it's frustrating for me when it's the basics that aren't being done. So, like I said, pressing. The last couple of matches, I've seen so many throw-ins where there's just no one moving for the ball. Admittedly, as I say that, Skip is the only player that I can think of that I remember actively running over half the pitch to come up closer to a throw-in to get the ball. And, you know, the players that we're talking about, they're getting man of the match, they're doing that, they're putting in a shift, they're not running, they're sprinting, they're making themselves available. And
well, that's kind of the basics that you expect of a football player, you know, that they put in the effort, they look like they want to be there, that they look like they want the ball. That's kind of the basics, isn't it, for being a footballer?
No one does that better than Højbjerg. Højbjerg is always wanting the ball. If you watch the highlights from either the Norwich match or Brentford, just keep your eyes on Højbjerg, because he is just constantly asking for the ball. Every single time there is a player near him that has the ball, he's calling for it, and he is there making himself available. And that's the sort of leadership that you want to see. That's what, when you're out there playing and you're trying to figure out what the next step is, you want people to be giving you options and you want to know that you've got them. So those basics, I think there are players that are doing it, but I think we need more players doing it. And I think once that ball gets rolling, I think then a lot of the other things start falling into place naturally. I think Kane's then going to find his form again. Son is going to find even better form as well. Moore obviously coming in and starting to score again. I think Moore's control of the ball is getting a lot better. There was an ongoing thing with a couple of my friends where we'd sort of see how long it would take before a ball would bounce off of Moore and go to an opposition player. And normally you didn't get past 2 or 3 minutes. But today it was just a lot better and it felt a lot more calm and controlled from him. So I just think Conte's in there and he's doing what he can, but I think he just needs to, you know, he's got the players on board clearly. It looks like they're all buying into what he's selling, and just hoping that everyone can take their little bit and do their bit. And if everyone does their little bit, the team then progresses.
I also think January is going to be key for that from the perspective of who goes and who stays, because there's been so much talked about, written about certain players and whether they're coming or they're going and whether they're doing well under Conte or whether they're not doing well under Conte. You know, those peripheral team members, your Winks, your Dele, your Ndombele, those kind of players. And I think January might be a good way of kind of finding out exactly what is happening there. Are they actually committed to the project? Are they wanting to fight for their place? Or are they the kind of players that we need to let go? Because we clearly, I mean, Ben Davies spoke this week, I think, didn't he, about that being part of that European squad that went away and feeling like there was a very definite second string. And that wasn't a great feeling to be part of that second string when the first string were left at home. And yes, you need to have a second string, but they don't want to feel like they are the second string and that there's no option for them other than to be part of the second string. You want all of those players to be feeling like they're fighting for their place in those Premier League games, that they're fighting for the option to be considered a starting player. And you don't want anybody to feel like they haven't got that as an option, because then inevitably they're not going to put in their best performances. If they know they've got a shout, then they're going to be putting in their best performance every time. And that's what we need, I think, going forward, is for all those players to believe that there is something for them there at Spurs. And if they don't believe that, then they should go somewhere else and hopefully they'll find that there.
So we've got the festive season coming up, lots of matches. Sean, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Uh-oh. Obviously, you've just reeled off all the matches that we've got through till Boxing Day. I'm going to add on to that one. We're away to Southampton after that.
Yes.
So I'll just read them back to you. So we're away at Brighton. Then we're away at Leicester. Home to Liverpool. Home to Palace. And then away to Southampton. Where do you think we're going to be in the table after that?
Oh, well, that's difficult because that depends on how everybody else does. I think you want to be saying the only game there you really want to seriously think losing isn't problematic is Liverpool. Anybody else, I think we should be looking for 3 points. I mean, obviously, 3 points against Liverpool would be excellent. And it's a home game, so we should be trying to get something from that game. But Liverpool are Liverpool and they're having, you know, a great season once again. But the rest of those teams, don't think you see anybody there that you would think we can't get a win against them. Yes, Brighton and Leicester have been having, you know, good runs. And Brighton, I think, are doing well this season. Leicester are struggling a little bit, but we know that the quality that they've got. So you can't write any of them off. And I mean, Palace, you know, are having a good season as well. But if we want to be finishing in the top four, which is clearly, you know, the game, the aim, then we need to be looking for points, 3 points preferably from all of those apart from Liverpool. And I think we'll be disappointed if we lose any of them, really. But if we lose more than one of them, then I think we're letting ourselves down in that. And I would hope that we're still going to be in that kind of fourth, fifth, sixth position so that we've got space to be gunning for that Champions League spot as we close the season down.
And I think we'd all take that as well. If we came out of that period and we were solidly in the top four, I don't mean like scraping it on goal difference, which we probably wouldn't anyway, but, you know, I think if we're consistently and solidly somewhere in amongst the top four, wherever that may be, I think that is a successfully navigated one of the most difficult periods for Spurs for quite a few seasons now. Given our string of injury runs and, you know, four matches in a week and things like that we've had before. I think to come out of this year into the new year and to come away and be in the top four and to feel comfortable in the top four, I think that would be a great way to end the year.
Yeah, I think that's the best option possible. As I say, I still think if we're in the fifth or sixth roles, then that, we're still in there with a good shout. You know, we're still positioning ourselves decently. And of course, where we end up depends a little bit on how those, you know, as I say, Manchester United's and Leicester's and Arsenal's do over the same period. So, you know, that Leicester game's going to be key for us, I think, in terms of how we do in that. And just putting together a run of results will be really important. And then we look at the women's games, only two games to go. We're in fourth place at the moment, just behind Brighton. Another two games that we, the way the season's going, should be picking up all 3 points.
So for the women's team, you'd expect to be in the same, in fourth basically, or even third.
Fourth or third. And let's remember, with the women's game, the top three are Champions League spots, and nobody thought at the beginning of the season we would be anywhere near that. If you look at the pundits, they were expecting us to be eighth or ninth. I think a lot of people were thinking Leicester were going to finish above us. A certain amount of disrespect being shown to, you know, Rhian Skinner and the work that she's doing at Spurs and to the hard work that the players have put in. But I think, you know, if we're third or fourth at Christmas with the women's team, that is beyond expectations of pre-season, but absolutely, given the way we've been playing this season, where we'd hope to be, you know, no disrespect to Villa or Everton, and going away from home is never easy. And Villa had a great result today in the Conte Cup, but those are two games. Villa are newer to the league than us, and they've, you know, certainly found it more difficult than we have so far. And Everton haven't had a strong start to the season. I think they are starting to put in some performances now, but they have been struggling. So fingers crossed, another 6 points, go into the Christmas break and then go to Chelsea in the new year and see what we can do, having taken points off all the other top three teams this season.
So I think we've got our heights set high, haven't we?
Yeah, but that's Spurs fans for you, isn't it?
Yeah, aim high and we'll see where we get.
and then moan about it when we don't get there.
Well, if you join us next time, you might be able to hear that bit. I think that's a really good place to wrap it up, Sean.
I think so. It's been great chatting to you as always, Lee. And I hope, don't forget, if you're out there and you fancy being a proud champion, get in touch with us about how you can do that as your supporters group or organisation. And otherwise, yeah, we will be back in the new year. Blimey, that feels wrong, but it will be January.
Where has this year gone? Well, thanks very much, Sean, and we'll see you next time.